From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. I apologize for the delay in getting started, but as you'll know from listening to my daily commentary the other day, my Dell computer and I aren't getting along very well. And just as we're about to start the program, it decided to die again, so let's hope that it survives the rest of the program. Jackie Hollander is here. She is a victims advocate, and she has a special event that she'll be attending here on May 31st called the Moonlight Madness Bowling Benefit. And of course, knowing Jackie, she's always there to help and benefit those that have been victims of sexual abuse or violence or whatever. Jackie, it's always a pleasure. How are you?
Hi, Dana. Happy Memorial Day to you. And before we get to this, I want to thank you for serving our country and mostly for all you do for victims, because you are one heck of a guy and you have served our country 100%.
Thank you. Thank you, Jackie. I appreciate that. Tell us about the Moonlight Madness Bowling Benefit. You know, I wish I was there. I love the bowl.
Oh, yeah. I'm horrible at bowling. You'll have to put up with me. It's going to be on May 31st in Rockford, Illinois, and it's actually going to be at the Don Carter Lanes. And if your listeners have got a pen and piece of paper, the number they can call there, they can call the Rockford Sexual Assault. $20. The tickets are like $30, $35 for a couple, and $20 of that goes to the Rockford Sexual Assault, to the rape victims, and it provides services and support for our rape victims in the state of Illinois. So I'm going to be there. So all of your listeners, if you want to come into Rockford, Illinois, and please come in. I'll be there that night, and I think 98.5 is going to be there, too, and a lot of media.
That's great. And, you know, what we can do and how we can help victims of any sort of violence, sexual violence, rape, domestic violence, you name it, is always a great thing. And, you know, for those of you that don't know, of course, Jackie herself is a victim. And it always amazes me, Jackie, how the victims, the strength comes out, and they're always there to help others. What drives you? What makes you carry on like this? Because a lot of people wouldn't blame you if you just said, that's enough, I've had it.
You know, I guess, you know, I went 20 years. When I got to the Supreme Court, I looked around, and I, because of who James Brown was and all the victims that were behind him, I had carried them on my back for so long. And, of course, when I went to the Illinois Coalition Against Sexual Violence, that's when I met a lot of victims, and they were all standing there for me when I went in to see the law change. And I want to be there for them because they're like my sisters.
Right.
We've all walked the same road.
We had Jackie in our community actually last night. I was involved in a march for the violence intervention program. Folks that we have here, they had a name change and all of that. But what's so different about today as opposed to, you know, 20 years ago, like you say, is the education aspect. You know, even from the police perspective or from the public's perspective, domestic violence or any sort of violence in those days was hushed up, was covered up, was you know, no one knew how to speak to a victim, how to educate those or help. It's changed a lot, but there's a lot of work yet to be done.
Oh, there is. I mean, oh yeah, when I got raped in 1988, there was nothing there for me. I was just alone against the most famous man in the world. And even 20 years later, I'm still up against it, even as his victim. Like I was telling you earlier, I am definitely looking for a really good lawyer that can step in here. Christie's Auction House, they're selling off James Brown's property.
Right.
And my turquoise bracelet that was on my wrist the night I got raped is now at Christie's auction house, and it's going to be sold. And, of course, the tabloids have gone with this story and printed. But, I mean, all of your listeners need to contact Christie's and tell them it's pretty bad when they have to sell a victim's bracelet. Christie's has been put on notice that it is my bracelet, and they're forging ahead because of the high dollars that the trustee for Mr. Brown's estate now feels like he's going to get.
Yeah, and the response, again, it sounds like Christie's wants to follow the money trail, but they have no compassion, no understanding, no, not even wanting to discuss this with you?
They did send a letter to the lawyer in Chicago that is representing me with two photographs, but the trustees who are actually in charge of the bracelet are forcing this to go ahead. It's going to cost me $10,000 to $15,000 to get a bracelet back that was stolen from me literally in a rape, and I went 20 years. I didn't know the bracelet by any means was in the van. You know what I'm saying? When I came out of the horror of what I'd been through all those hours, I wasn't preoccupied with a bracelet, for gosh sakes. I was in shock, and I was trying to survive. It wasn't, but my thought wasn't on a bracelet, and I went 20 years. Yes, I knew the bracelet was gone, but I did not know that Mr. Brown had kept the bracelet and actually worn the bracelet and actually had his initials put in it.
Wow.
So he actually wore it as a trophy.
If you're just tuning in, Jackie Hollander is here, and you know, a lot of people will say, Jackie, that's just a bracelet, let it go. But there's a bigger picture to this. Like you say the word trophy. I would say the word that, you know, he's claiming his prize or whatever. So there's that, you know, that psychological aspect of it, is that James Brown or James Brown's estate or anyone connected with James Brown should have nothing of yours because he took so much from you.
Well, I mean, I've spent 20 years serving his sentence. He should have been in prison. I served it. And I'm looking around here, and now it's going to, it cost me thousands to go all the way to the United States Supreme Court to have him die while I was in the United States Supreme Court.
Right.
And then I have to turn around and spend another $20,000 to get a several hundred dollar bracelet back. But let me tell you what's so sacred about that bracelet, okay?
Okay.
My mother, I was very young back then when I got raped. I mean, I'm not old now, but I was young then.
Okay.
And my mother had lent me. It was her bracelet.
Right.
It wasn't my bracelet. And I had on my little blue jean skirt with my little white cowboy boots. And, you know, she had lent me this turquoise bracelet. It was a cuff bracelet because I didn't have, nice jewelry back then. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so it was my mom's, and my mom is now dead. And we had the floods, and I lost a lot of stuff in the floods, photographs of my family and everything. And that bracelet survived that horrible rape with that insane man, and went through my pain, and I think it signifies life.
Yeah.
And it was my mom's, and the proceeds from this auction at Christie's is going to pay Mr. Brown's taxes.
Wow.
Now, nothing personal, but I don't feel that my rape and my family should have to pay for his taxes. That's just inexcusable.
Absolutely. And off air, Jackie, I will send you some information about a couple of attorneys I think that may be able to help you with this. If you're just tuning in, Jackie Hollander is here. Jackie, when you go through this whole horror, I'm going to use that word, of what you've gone through. And you and I have talked here, actually, most recently. We won't mention the case that we've talked about because we've covered that, and that's what not what we're going to talk about here tonight. But I want to get in a little bit about the victim.
I want everybody to know it wasn't Drew Peterson, too.
Yeah, exactly. It's a case where all of a sudden now the person who has served time in jail is going to get out. The victim is terrified for their lives. The district attorney and their office is either just not taking the case seriously. They're too busy. They don't care. Whatever it is, I want to talk about the mentality a little bit, Jackie, of the victim who, you know, the 2 or 3 years is done now, and all of a sudden he's going to be out, and you're so scared, and you don't know what you're going to do. Let's go. Yeah, I know. Let's go down that road.
Because James Brown, even when I went to the district attorney in South Carolina, they didn't put him behind bars because, I mean, it was God who was going to put this man who the world called an icon behind bars. So, I mean, we have a really messed up system here.
Yep.
The victim is made to feel more like a victim, and they become so depressed and so down on themselves. And I went through 20 years of not feeling pretty, 20 years of just feeling like, to put it in words that people can understand, like a low-life piece of crap. Mm. I had lost my standing as a record producer. I was, you know, even in my lawsuit, I was called a public relations person for Mr. Brown, when in reality, I produced a record, several records on this man. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't, I wasn't down, but 20 years of the world beating you every which way you turn, you lose all your self-esteem, you lose everything, and it's hard to come out of that dark nightmare. And for that young lady, in the case you're talking about, I just really have a really good feeling. She is surrounded by now a person whom I won't bring up their names, but she is surrounded by what I feel is her knight in shining armor,
right,
who is this person, this wonderful woman, is going to see her all the way through, and I believe a light is going to shine on her, and life is going to be good for her.
Absolutely, and it's advocates like you, and I'll say her name, she won't mind, Susan Murphy Milano, and others, and there are many, many others that are out there that will come and even, you know, just sit beside you in the courtroom or be there to talk or to share an email with or something to get your mind off that, again, that horror. And you have to continue on with life, but how do you live life, Jackie, looking over your shoulder all the time? And you know, when you turn the lights off at night, every little noise makes you jump up in bed.
Well, I did that. I mean, I lived my life in fear. And hey, Dana, he's dead.
Yeah.
A lot of the weight is off, but I mean, there's still a lot of supporters of Mr. Brown. Like with this bracelet and the fact that I created the trust that everything's in, that would still like to see me dead. And, you know, I'm going to live with that for the rest of my life until I take my last breath. And I just get up in the morning and I go through the day, and I try not to think about it. But I know the threats are there for me, and I I'm not going to say that just because James Brown died, I'm out of the clear. I mean, he had a lot of supporters out there that don't like the girl that took him all the way to the United States Supreme Court. That they don't like the girl that stands up and says Mr. Brown was a rapist and tears apart his image. And they're talking about they've erected statues on the man and they want to build a museum and... You know, I'm going to be fighting him all the way. You know, he is Mr. Brown, his own lawyers, Buddy Dallas and Mr. Cannon, who served him for 20 years in a capacity of even protecting him in my, protecting him to a fault because of my rape. And, of course, we have been talking. Now they're left. They're left suffering, and they may go to jail for protecting this man because he left this estate in such a mess. So everyone James Brown touched, their life is destroyed.
And it's, again, it's such a tragedy. But, you know, Jackie, just before we let you go here, again, when you think of the term strength and determination, fortitude, caring, it's people like yourself that, you know, fortifies those words, and you can help others by helping yourself. And I'll never cease to be amazed. Boy, every victim that I speak with, and I'm going to be speaking with a couple of family members here in a minute again, who are out there helping others. And again, in the last minute, Jackie, again, your words of encouragement. Again, that young lady who's just gone through this, where her ex is getting out of jail. If you had a minute to sit down and talk with her, what would you say?
If I had a minute to talk with her, first of all, I would tell her that I'm not that far, wherever she is, that my hand is not there, that my heart, I'm not saying prayers for her, and that when she goes into court, if she feels someone squeezing her hand, that it's me. And even though I'm not there, I know her pain, and just keep praying and keep believing. And she has so much more than I do right now. I didn't have a Dana Pretzer. I didn't have a Susan Murphy Milano. And so she's very blessed in that sense. And to keep her faith in God, and to know that we have good law enforcement officers out there, and that she is going to make it. It's going to be a rough road, but she's got to keep her faith, and she's got to keep putting that foot in front of her, even if the whole world turns their back on her. She knows she's got some support from me, and I know she's got it from you. And I know I've gone over a minute, but I wish I could put my arms around her, and I wish she could be with us on the night that we bowl on the 31st, and see all the other victims.
Absolutely.
Up here in Rockford, Illinois.
Absolutely. Jackie, it's always a pleasure.
And Dana, to you, thank you for all. I mean, I don't think everybody thanks you, but my gosh, you have given so much to victims throughout the United States when you're a long way away, and made such a difference for me and for others, especially down in Carbondale, Illinois, when you hosted that. And I just can't thank you enough, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. But happy Memorial Day to you, and I hope the roads are safe for you.
We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Okay, Jackie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Jackie Hollander, and again, the event is the Moonlight Madness Bowling Event, May 31st. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. On the 20th of May, there was a supposed to be a court ruling in regards to the Becca McAvoy case. And Robert Engel is the former Chickasaw police officer who allegedly raped and sodomized young Becca. We've covered this case many times on the program, and we will continue covering it because I'm outraged as far as what's been going on. And again, I hear that there's a delay. The case wasn't looked after. There's so many people that care. There was a candlelight vigil. There was a rally. All sorts of things have been happening, except in the courtroom. And I thought I'd bring on Becca's dad and cousin Teresa Jordan, and her dad Aiden McAvoy are here with me this evening. Hi guys.
Hi, how are you doing, Dana?
I'm great. We'll start with you, Aiden. Again, here we are, another freaking delay. I believe it's been set over now till June 10th.
That's correct.
And the reason for the delay again?
This time they said it was the judge. They didn't have some medical records that I'd signed for some 2 weeks ago. So I had to go down and re-sign papers with the courthouse and with the hospital so they could interview the doctor and get some more medical records.
You know, and this is a family show, so I'm trying really hard not to say something that I shouldn't on air here that may offend someone, but this is just absolute BS. I think I can say BS. If this was the DA, if this was the state that was asking for all these delays, the fence would have jumped up and down, and Aiden, you've been policeman a long time, and cried that there's been too many delays, and the case probably would have been thrown out. What is the DA saying about all these delays?
Well, I talked to the DA through one of our news anchors, and he's saying give him all the rope he needs to hang himself. Mm. The more delays he's asking for, giving us more time to get our case, so when he comes up, we got all our ducks in a row.
And, you know, I do understand that. But I'm thinking from your perspective as a family. Of course, you don't want to go into court with a case that's weak and not prepared. But this has gone on just too long. Teresa, you've worked tirelessly, you know, with Rhonda, all your family. We had the vigil and the rally and all this sort of stuff. But it must be so disheartening to keep hearing these delays.
Yes, it's very disappointing because we feel, you know, that we need closure, and, you know, it's hard because we really can't have peace, you know, with anything until there is closure. And all we can do is, you know, just keep Rebecca's story alive and try to alert more people because, you know, Crawford needs to be addressed as well.
Yeah. Well, it's a much bigger case, and I'm not making light of your family situation at all because that is so huge, but there's also another case going on at the same time, plus the whole aspect of Crawford versus Washington. Teresa, the rally and the vigil on the 20th, how did those go?
Well, the vigil went really well. The rally, we had a pretty good turnout, but at the same time, we didn't have the turnout that we expected. And then, too, because we had found out the day before that, you know, court was again postponed.
Right.
So maybe that had something, you know, to do with some of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Aiden, of course, we all know that the tragic accident that took Becca's life and injured you so badly. You, also a police officer, you're watching this unfold. You've lived these cases, but I'm sure you never thought that it would ever affect your family. How are you doing? I don't think anyone has asked you that for a while.
Well, I'm making a pretty good recovery. I'm almost off my cane now.
Oh, good.
I can walk short distances without my cane, and my paralysis, my face is cleared up quite substantially.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, Becca, just a little angel. All you have to do is watch the videos and the, you know, on the websites and see the pictures. And you know, Aiden, that she's listening and watching everything here, and she's fighting the fight, too. But, you know, you see that empty chair at the table. You see the birthdays come around and Christmas and all that sort of stuff. And when I speak to families of victims, and they have to continue on with life knowing that there's that emptiness. Yeah, there's that emptiness, but really, Becca will never go away. She'll always be a part of your life.
That's true. Got her pictures everywhere. She's going to live on forever.
Teresa, the media, for some strange reason, hasn't picked up on this story the way that they should have, in my opinion. We've fought the fight here. Of course, we carry the show. Your local media, Jessica Taloni, etc., have done an excellent job. The Wilco show apparently has taken some interest, but this story is just so sad and is so tragic. What would you like the media to do more of?
Well, I think that the media, and this just shows where our nation is morally now,
right.
That it matters more about, you know, Hollywood stars in today's society than it does about our children and victims and about these laws that, you know, so they even violate the children's rights. And I think that should speak to us as a nation, that we all need to start standing up and voting in better laws and making our voices heard, so that our children aren't victimized when things like this happen, and so that families don't have to
go through what we are, in fact, going through right now. You know, we're a victim of the Crawford Law.
Right.
And I just hate for anybody to have to go through and do what we've had to do, you know, and all we can do is hope and pray that the media will one day pick this up, because Crawford really needs to be addressed, you know, nationally.
Absolutely. Aiden, just before I let you guys go, this will come up again on the 10th of June. I don't want you to comment as far as the gag order goes, but there's a possibility that there may be a gag order enforced here. Your elective representatives, congressmen, senators, whoever, I know there's been some discussion as far as changing the law. Have you been receiving support from government officials as far as your case goes?
As far as I can tell, we're receiving some support. The head of the Child Advocacy Center in Mobile is backing us. And our local DA is backing us.
And, you know, the district attorney, we're not making light of his position in court. You know, for those that don't understand the court process, it is the best process we have right now, but it certainly has a lot of flaws. And the delay aspect of it is one of the big flaws, because it does no one any good for something like this. But what will we expect to hear, or hope to expect to hear, Aiden, on June 10th?
Well, the way I understand it now, he's just grasping at straws, because I believe they're going to allow the medical records, and they're going to allow the doctor's testimony, which is going to hang him when he goes to trial.
Exactly, and if that's what's going to happen, and that's great, because you know, a desperate man can only be thrown so many lifesavers, and hopefully this individual will, you know, like you and I do when we get on the stand, we swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God, and hopefully there's that small bit of decency, Teresa, for this individual to tell the truth. But what's next, Teresa? I know you and your family have been working very hard. Just before I let you go, of course, we'll have you back on the show again soon to get another update. But what's next?
Well, we just really hope that, you know, justice will be served for Becca, you know, next. And then also that there will be more attention still brought to this case, because, like I said, Crawford does need to be addressed and amended, or something else needs to be done in that case. I personally believe that, you know, God is trying to get somebody's attention, because not only did it happen here one time, it's happened here twice.
Right.
In Mobile, Alabama, where a month apart there was two victims, and now this Crawford Law is in the way, and I just think that that's God trying to point something out to people. And I think that people need to pay attention when, in fact, things like this do happen. And we need to know that a higher power is trying to address something here. And we need to go and, you know, do what it is that he would have us do.
So true. And you know that you have my support 1,000%. We will stay in touch. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Dana. Keep up the good work.
Okay, take care. Thank you. Bye-bye. You know, this case, it angers and frustrates me so much, and I just hope and pray that answers will come to this family. Former Bolingbrook Police Sergeant Drew Peterson was recently arrested on a weapons charge. If you happen to listen to my daily commentary at scaredmonkeysradio.com, you'll see I had an interesting perspective on that arrest. And Mr. Peterson's attorney, Joel Brodsky, I sat down with Joel Brodsky, and we talked about this case. And again, I want to make it very clear that I believe the investigation into the death of Kathleen Savio and the disappearance of Stacey Peterson needs to be investigated properly. But this whole issue has turned into such a media circus that even the media may be turning towards Drew Peterson in a favorable light. Or am I wrong? I sat down with Joel Brodsky and asked him just that question. Okay, we're back. I have Joel Brodsky with me this evening. He is Drew Peterson's attorney, and if you've been watching the news, you'll see that there have been some developments in the Drew Peterson case. Not the developments that you all think. would happen as far as the disappearance of Stacy Peterson, but rather a weapons charge against Drew Peterson. And if you listen to my daily commentary today, I think you'll hear my take on that. But I thought I would go to Joel Brodsky, the attorney for Drew Peterson, and see what he has to say. Hi, Joel.
Hello, how are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing fine. The day before a court hearing, and I know the results of that court hearing came out, your client is arrested on a weapons charge, a weapon that, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that the Illinois State Police had for quite some time, a weapon that was in Mr. Peterson's possession while he was still a police officer, and a weapon that initially they knew had too short a barrel, had decided that they weren't going to lay a charge, and then lo and behold, the day before the court hearing, they decide to arrest Mr. Peterson. Am I wrong on any of that?
No, you're not wrong. The weapon was taken on November 1st, and Drew was still a police officer November 12th, and he voluntarily surrendered. They asked for his duty weapons. He voluntarily surrendered those to the Illinois State Police. This is an AR-15. He was a SWAT team member, and this was one of his secondary SWAT weapon. He qualified with it every year for the last 10 years, and we're really at a loss to understand why this charge was brought. At least as far as you know, the seriousness of it, this is a felony charge, obviously, and you know, why they would do this is really beyond our imagination. When you look at the Illinois state law, which says that an officer's duty weapon is exempt from any type of barrel length or, you know, repeating weapon type of requirement. So, I mean, the timing is very suspicious, obviously, and I think it's reflective of the Illinois state's police seem to have an obsession, which is, you know, an unreasonable fixation with preventing Drew from getting his guns back, you know, no matter what the judge's order is. And I think this is just one ploy to attempt to stop the guns from going back to Drew.
What's the status of this now? Obviously, he's been bonded out. You must have a hearing coming up?
Yeah, we made bond. He was only in custody for about an hour. Paris Hilton did more time, right? And we have a preliminary hearing on this coming Friday, a week from today. And we're gathering our evidence, and we've been developing evidence almost on an hourly basis, and I can tell you the evidence is going to be overwhelming that this AR-15 was one of Drew's duty weapons that he used constantly during SWAT operations. And given that, you know, I don't see how the state police how the prosecution has any case whatsoever.
Now, there was a hearing, I believe, yesterday, or the results of a hearing yesterday, where some of Drew's guns were returned to the custody of his son. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, the judge, in his ruling from the bench, even mentioned Drew's arrest and made comment that, you know, you guys basically said, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, he used more judicial language, but he said, listen, you guys have been presenting ex parte, you know, secret evidence to me for the last month and a half. And, you know, you've never mentioned to me during this month and a half of ex parte evidence that one of these guns had too short a barrel. And I really am kind of peeved about that. You know, if you're going to put me in the position of ordering the return of an illegal weapon, you should have told me about it. And I think that's just indicative of what's going on here. But the judge did order vindicating Drew's property, right, saying, look, this is his property. He's not charged with a crime. You had the wet property more than sufficient time to process it. Give it back. And if it can't go to Drew, it can go to wherever he wants it to go as long as there's, you know, legal record of the transfer. And that's what we've done. We've transferred the weapons to his son, and they'll be in his hands within the next 12 days.
No, obviously, the AR-15 is evidence right now, or at least is being examined as evidence right now as far as the other charge goes. Were there any other duty weapons that Drew had possessed at that time that may be returned to Bolingbrook PD or wherever?
Well, there was an MP5, which is a submachine gun, you know, an automatic weapon, that was issued by the Bolingbrook Police Department, the SWAT officers, and that's been That's going back to them. That's their gun. Drew's service pistol is Drew's property. It was his registered service pistol, but it's his property, and that's going to his son. And there was one other gun that belonged to somebody else that had, was taken. It wasn't Drew's, and it wasn't his son's, and it was in his possession when they took it. And that'll, the owner of that gun is going to have to go make his own arrangements to get it back from the Illinois State Police. We have no authority to direct what happens to that gun. So out of 11 guns that were confiscated, we're getting 8 of them, the 8 that Drew wants sent over to his son, and the rest will go back to their rightful owners, either Del Bolingbrook Police Department, other than the AR-15, obviously, which is never going to go back to Drew. We'll probably end up doing is, once this case is dismissed, is perhaps selling it to Bolingbrook Police Department or some other police department that wants to use the weapon as part of their SWAT operations. It's a great SWAT gun, I've been told, anyway.
Okay. One quick question before I let you go.
Sure.
Has there been any status update as far as the investigation into the disappearance of Stacy? Really, we haven't heard anything here in the media.
Yeah. As far as Stacy's case goes, I think there's been more witnesses going before the grand jury regarding Kathleen Savio than we have regarding Stacy. Kind of as I've stated, they've really not come up with anything that shows that there was any foul play in Stacy's disappearance. No evidence of that at all. For some reason, they refused to refocus their investigation to try to look for Stacy alive and perhaps overseas somewhere or in hiding. They're still, I guess it's kind of like if they can't play the game, they want to take their ball home. They're convinced that she's deceased, and they're going to continue to look for her only in that condition. And if they can't find anything, they're just simply going to, the investigation is going to stall and go cold. And that's kind of unfortunate. I wish they would keep a more of an open mind.
Absolutely. Joel Brodsky, thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Joel Brodsky, attorney for Drew Peterson. One thing you can say when it comes to this investigation, there's never a dull moment. And if you haven't had a chance, take a listen to my daily commentary regarding Drew Peterson and his arrest on a weapons charge. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, if you think back to last week's show, Susan Murphy Milano and I were discussing another case, and there's so many of these that are not getting the media coverage that they should, and they're so important. Of course, we're talking about the disappearance of Lily Aramburo, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And again, I apologize to friends and family if I haven't. There's excellent article on this story and the disappearance of Lily at Susan's blog, which is murphymilanojournal.blogspot.com. And of course, we have a link to it on our show notes. And what I've done this evening is to bring on a family spokesperson for Lily Aramburo, Janet Forte. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Dana. Thank you for having me. And thank you to everyone that's been supporting us, especially Susan Murphy Milano. Now we're finally getting a little bit of more cooperation by the Miami-Dade Police.
Absolutely. Again, you jumped ahead of me, and that's fine. I'm just about to say, has the Miami police got off their butts and started doing something here?
Well, I don't know what they've done. They haven't said that they've done anything, but we have an appointment for next week to speak about it.
Okay, well, that's a good start. Tell my audience about Lily when she went missing.
Lily disappeared June 1st, 2007. She was last seen by Christian Pacheco and Kelly Starling. I'm not exactly sure about who else was there because the story has changed a few times. But basically, she was reported missing 24 hours later by Christian Pacheco. Kristen did not call her mother or family or friends to see if she had gone there first before making this report with the police. Police took the report from him, and basically they didn't follow up very well with it. Certain procedures weren't followed. For example, I'm not very sure what the procedure is for this, but the case was assigned to a detective that was on vacation.
Wow.
So the flyer was not done for 2 months. She was just listed just yesterday on the National Center for Missing Adults, because it took so long for the police to get back to the organization.
You know, and that's so frustrating to hear. And I want to share with the audience that there is a website set up for Lily at Lily Arambura, and I'll spell that. It's LILLYARAMBURO. Again, Lily Arambura .ning.com, and we'll share that a little later in the interview also. Let's talk about Christian Paco and Kelly Ray Sterling. What relationship did they have with Lily?
Well, Lily was engaged to be married to Christian. They had applied for a license shortly before she had disappeared. Kelly Ray Sterling was someone that she knew from high school, which they had been friends on and off since then.
The family, Lily's family, and I know I've seen some comments from her mom and others, and of course you as the spokesperson. It must be so frustrating to know that a loved one or a friend or whoever is missing, and not being sure that you're getting the help that you can from people. Let's talk about the family and how they're coping.
Oh, it's extremely frustrating. There's not much help offered, you know, from the time that the investigation starts or the disappearance happens. They don't give you a paper with organizations or numbers, you know. You're just on your way, and it's up to you to pretty much find out what resources are out there. It's taken me this long to be able to find some support and some help. You know, this whole time I've been sending emails, making calls to local media here, and as of yet, there has not been a story on Lily.
And that's the part that's so frustrating. And we will keep working on that here for you and trying to get you some help. And I'm sure Susan will, too. There's something that I'm not sure if you'll be able to comment on, Janet, is the responding officer to the complaint of Lily being missing. Is there some allegation here that that officer has some ties to Christian Paco? Can you comment on that?
That's what I've heard. I don't know this as a fact for myself, but I've heard it repeatedly, and it's something that needs to be looked into further.
Do you know, has Christian Paco been spoken to or questioned by the police?
Initially, when he gave the report.
Right.
And then after that, it was about 6 months that I had been going down to the police station and with her mom trying to get some answers. And finally, their answer to not having interviewed him was that every time they would go over, he wasn't there, and they'd leave a business card, and that was it. You know, so he never called back to set up that interview, and it wasn't pursued. So eventually, they told me that they did, but I don't know that.
Tell us a little bit about Lily herself, what kind of person she is.
Lily was a very sweet girl, very open. She had a pure heart. She loved the oldies. She loved being very artsy. Like, she was really talented. She would write a lot. She was a good writer. Like, she kept journals and stuff like that. She was very passionate and like loving, you know, with her friends. And there was a time that she was very much into Buddhism and meditation, and her life was, you know, everything was great, beautiful at that point. But eventually she had to come across Kristen again, and everything went downhill. But she was a beautiful person.
Did Lily have any medical conditions, any reason that she may have disappeared or fallen ill?
I don't think so. I know that she suffered from depression, but she had gone to counseling and she was being treated for that, and as far as I know, she was okay. But there was some questionable stuff that was happening before she disappeared, which is what I attribute her disappearance to. I do not think that she walked away from this. I do not think that she wanted to start a new life somewhere. There's absolutely no way that she would have gone this long without calling her mother, without asking about her baby, which was only 8 months when she vanished. So if she did have any other reason, I do not know about it.
As far as the questionable activity, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
What was that thing? I'm sorry.
You said that just before she disappeared, there was some questionable activity or questionable things that were going on. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. 3 days before she disappeared, she had been in treatment, drug treatment. And Christian picked her up for a court appearance. Previous to that, she had been clean. But at the court appearance, they had her tested, and she came out positive. She told the court that there was no way that she used, and she, you know, she, that was her statement. She refused that, you know, she had used drugs. We didn't know this at the time, but the next day, she called a family member and said that she woke up with track marks and her arms bleeding,
mm-hmm.
and that she doesn't shoot up heroin,
right.
and that she was scared that Christian was going to do something to her, that he had threatened that he was going to make her disappear, and, you know, she was crying out for help.
Well, let's hope that with your meeting next week at the Miami Police, that an investigation will finally start and carry on properly so the family can get the answers that they so rightly deserve. And again, for those of you that want more information, and of course, if you know anything about the disappearance, contact the Miami Police Department or go to this website, Lily, L-I-L-L-Y, Aram Burrow, A-R-A-M, B-U-R.
Can I have a quick correction?
Sure.
It's actually Justice in Miami at blogspot.com.
Okay. This lilyarmburrow.nig.com doesn't exist?
Yes, that's another one.
Okay.
I didn't hear you say the name part. I thought you said lilyarmburrow.com.
Yeah, lilyarmburrow.nig.com. And the other website, Janet?
Justice in Miami. blogspot.com.
Excellent. And of course, we'll stay on top of the story here, and feel free to contact me or have Susan contact me if you need any more airtime.
Thank you, Dana. We're going to be doing a vigil, a candlelight vigil next week on Sunday. It's going to be the 1 year anniversary. We're hoping to get, you know, a good support out there, and hopefully media comes out, and I'll update you next time we speak.
I hope so. Okay. Thank you, Janet.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Good luck.
You too.
You know, you keep hearing about these cases, and you keep, you know, scratching your head and wondering why. Well, it's life is why it happens, but we need to focus more. We need to do more. You know, Scared Monkeys does it. We do it. Others do it. But there needs to be more help for these people. I got about a minute or two left on the show. If you'd like to call in, 1-306-842-7884, 1-306-842-7884. I won't keep you on the air long, but just to finish off the program, and I will remind you that our website is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com, www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live, you can hear podcasts of past programs, listen to my daily commentary, leave comments, whatever, and of course the creme de la creme of blogs is scaredmonkeys.com. And look in the show notes for tonight's program for links of websites that you can go to and check out as far as our stories this evening. And again, if you have any information in these cases, you know, please, you can remain anonymous. Call in the information to your local police service all these folks have websites with contact numbers. Without your help, it makes it so difficult to investigate. And the question as far as police departments and their slow response, you know, we've talked about this. We had Drew Kessie on here just not that long ago talking about new laws that police departments and police officers are required, you know, almost immediately to start entering names into these databases, getting the word out. Because if you don't get the story out, you don't get the investigation rolling right away. It's going to take so long. And here we are a year later, or 2 years later, or 3 years later, or whatever. And, you know, the families have to get out there and fight and pound the pavement and do whatever they can to try and get the help that they should have received right away. Anyway, that's it. That's the show for tonight. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Good night.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.